This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
An interesting approach at Arsenal, and then a straightforward evening at Huddersfield completes what was a tricky week for Manchester City. A point earned at the Emirates given the circumstances, or two dropped given the lateness of the equaliser. We'll leave that up to you to decide. What is for sure, though, the way the team went about getting that point hasn't been seen too many times before. We'll discuss both of those games shortly, plus we'll look at the unquantifiable. Guardiola can't help himself from talking about the vibes around the club at the moment, so we'll be taking a look at what he means and why he keeps doing it. Plus, we'll hear from Joe from Turfcast ahead of Burnley's visit to the Etihad on Saturday. And then we'll have Damien from the Monaco podcast Radio Diagonal on the show later to tell us all about next week's Champions League opponents. All that to come. I'm David Mooney. With me this week is City fan James Faulkner.
Hello, David. Hello, listener.
Hello, hello. And from the Daily Mail, we've got the man who has had possibly the worst day anybody has had in a very long time. It's Jack Gorn.
Yeah. Well, it's a normal day in my life. It's 4.5 hours.
Yes.
Since we should have recorded, that I have been working tirelessly with IT to make sure that my microphone is working, and probably the listener that James referred to there would rather the microphone not be working, but it is. So I am buzzing.
Yeah, but you're good to go. You're now all the tension left your body. Are you good?
Well, I mean, as you well know, I live with a great amount of tension in my body anyway, so nothing's changed in that sense.
Good, good. Well, we'll talk about some football, get you through it. We'll start then with the Arsenal and Huddersfield games, specifically the Arsenal one, James, because I guess it's a bit of a surprise to see City so happy to concede possession. It very rarely happens. I can kind of remember them doing it against Atletico Madrid away from home. And there was a game against Brighton in lockdown when Cancelo got sent off after about 10 minutes. But apart from that, they obviously want the ball more often than not. And I'm kind of interested because, like, I don't know if Guardiola went into this game expecting to do that, or if the circumstances of the game kind of heightened the ability to do that, because they scored early on. Suddenly, you know, they've got something to hang on to and they can defend. Either way, it's fascinating, isn't it, how they approached it?
There's no chance that he didn't at least 80% prepare for the game to be like that, I think. Mm. I think you're looking at what it's like playing Arsenal recently, and I've seen sort of headlines saying that it's sort of devolved into the most boring spectacle in football because they're both terrified of losing that game. I think that's probably fair enough. Like 3 points is a sort of big gap when you're coming towards the end of a season, and scoring early definitely will have helped to reinforce any kind of sort of defensive philosophy that he wanted to deploy. But it worked. You know, I mean, like, discounting late equaliser, for the vast majority of the game, between, in particular, sort of the whole defensive unit, Doku and Haaland, it completely worked. And I'm happy for Guardiola to be streetwise if it gets us, you know, albeit a draw away at Arsenal. I'm happy with that.
I mean, we all thought we were going to get battered before the game. So, like, yep. Fair's fair, isn't it? If you can get out of there with a point, no matter how you do it that way, yeah.
That's it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought they were brilliant.
I thought they were brilliant.
It was interesting being sat in the ground, like the press box at Arsenal. Like you're really in and amongst it. Although I'm sort of, the way I've described that makes it sound like you're in the middle of a load of ultras. You're not. You're in the middle of a load of Arsenal fans.
Yes,
obviously. But they do, like, sort of, they kind of get on the referee's back quite early, and it's quite, it's not a difficult atmosphere to play. It's just like, it's a bit screechy. And it started quite early on Sunday, and there was a lot of sort of shithousery going on from a City perspective, which, you know, even though I'm a neutral, sort of watch him every week, I was like, yeah, go for it. You've had Mikel Arteta teams do that to you before. Like,
yeah, go for it. And I tell you what, Bernardo Silva, like chief shithouse among them. I saw, like, Liverpool fans cannot stand Bernardo Silva for all the games that they've played against him down the years. And watching the game from home with, you know, social media open on one side, I was seeing Liverpool fans saying, you know what, when it's not against us, this is brilliant. Bernardo's great.
It's the two moments, isn't it? You've got the Guard of Honour where he was having a brew, and then you've got the game where he sort of pirouetted in the middle of the pitch past every single Liverpool player. If I was a Liverpool fan, I'd absolutely hate him. I'm just glad that, you know, they're always happy to get under the skin of Liverpool supporters.
Yeah, Jack, you spoke to Guardiola afterwards, and one of the questions you asked him that I thought was
very good and well put.
Was very good and well put. You're right. Yeah, was effectively he didn't get it at first when you said like lots of people didn't think you had that in you, and like when you listened to him talk about it and the way he said, yeah, I didn't think we had it in us either.
yeah. Basically, initially, I'd sort of said, oh, critics of you don't think that you're able to defend for that long. To which he, yeah, as a sort of slight window into talking to Pep Guardiola, he listens out for certain words, and if he hears criticism, or that if he hears the word critics on an afternoon where he thinks he's going to be criticised for the way he's set up, he immediately thinks you're asking about, like, oh, you play five at the back, that, you know, you've abandoned all your principles, which is not sort of what I was getting at. But it was funny, like, when he'd realised that he'd got the wrong end of the stick, and then went, oh yeah, I didn't realise we had it in us either to sort of defend that gallantly for so long. But I was like, it's like you were saying about the vibes at the top of the show. To be able to sort of defend as a unit for that long and that stoically is a really positive thing for them, I think. And I don't necessarily think they need to play like that again this year.
It won't look like that often. Maybe Anfield, but other than
that's
that,
that's it. Yeah. Anfield will be it, yeah.
But I mean, like last year, I was talking to play golf with Sam Lee yesterday, and we were talking about them being Pep sent them like lambs to the slaughter last year. Where it was like, well, we're going to continue playing the way we want to play, and they obviously either weren't good enough, weren't fit enough, there was too many injuries, etc., and they just kept playing the same way, whereas this has been, you know, I was very encouraged by it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the other side of this, James, is Arsenal have, I mean, built an identity on scoring goals from set pieces. And it was remarkable the number of times City went, yeah, go on, just chuck the ball in the box. Like, we'll deal with it. Just chuck it in the box. Doesn't matter. We'll head it away. Donnarumma will come and punch it. Doesn't matter.
That's it. The one word is Donnarumma. I think that the confidence that he seems to have put, not just sort of like into the overall team, and as a broader point, I think that talking about vibes and a word that I sort of prefer footballing wise, momentum, a sort of like a feeling sort of within a club and what have you. Donnarumma just seems to have made everybody feel very self-assured, and I perhaps have underestimated him. I mean, I was posting Instagram stories.
Justice being like, for Edison.
Yeah, being like, I don't want you. You can't do anything with your feet. If Luis Enrique doesn't want you, then why on earth would we? But like, I'm so like completely sold on him as like he's potentially the second best goalkeeper in the world after maybe Courtois, and defending from corners and what have you. It just felt like I wasn't nervous.
It's weird that, isn't it? Like the way that Arsenal bullied City last season at set pieces, and like every time the ball went in the box, you thought they could score from this. Whereas on Sunday, you were thinking, "Go on, then." It's like we've dealt with them all so far; they'll be fine.
Yeah, well, I feel quite bad about this, really, because there could be an element of revisionism with Edison, and you sort of don't want that to happen because obviously he's an absolutely sensational goalkeeper. But you look at the derby and the Mbeumo effort that Donnarumma tips around the post. I can't remember what score it was. Maybe it was Well, maybe it was 2-0 at the time.
I think 2-0, yeah.
But I mean,
yeah,
that, yeah, you know, it changes the complexion of the game if that goes in. I think Edison probably saves that effort, but I think he taps it back into the box. And then it's like a sort of a 50-50 as to who gets that second ball and maybe...
There's a fine line, like, I think, with Edison. So, generally, peak of his career, Champions League final, essentially winning it as much as Rodri did. Maybe the season after that was all right, but certainly last season, he looked like maybe a lad in the office who's become disillusioned with his job or who's having problems and it's affecting what he's doing. Didn't look right. He'd obviously made his mind up that he sort of had had enough and was going through the motions a little bit. And I think we felt that last season. I kind of maybe think he stayed a season too long. But in terms of the revisionism, I think you're right, because the impact of Donnarumma coming in feels like it's really... He's had maximum impact, really. That could further lend itself to people perhaps not recognising Edison for as good as he was. And I think that buffer of last season where he had his shoulders down and I didn't feel personally particularly confident about him being in the side, that's probably not helped. But then, you know, going forward, I think, and speaking to people, anybody who knows the football knows what he's done. I think long term, and it'll be a good indicator of people who are sort of have more short term thinking and vision for sort of his career.
I notice in the press conferences, Jack, that Guardiola doesn't stop mentioning Edison at the moment. He keeps talking about, you know, we do it differently with Eddie and Donnarumma.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in his mind, isn't it? Like they're going to have to play differently, and they can't rely on Donnarumma pinging 50-60 yard balls. But what they can rely on is Donnarumma is capable of playing a 15-yard pass. Like
that's the way.
But the way people were talking about Donnarumma when he was coming in was like the guy can't even walk. He doesn't even know what his toes are. You know? When obviously that wasn't the case. I mean, they James's point about PSG was sort of interesting about if not a guy that Enrique wants, like. Obviously, Enrique came out and said we want a different profile of goalkeeper. From people I'd spoken to around Donnarumma when he joined, it seemed like it was a decision that the director of football had made, and it was more sort of around the contract, and that Donnarumma had a contract pre-Club World Cup ready to sign, and they went, "We'll do this after the Club World Cup." And then suddenly when the Club World Cup finished, it was like whisked away from him. And actually, it sounded like it had been driven from the board rather than the coach. But then the coach has obviously had to come out and say, we want a different profile of keeper because they've signed the guy from Rennes, I think.
Is it Chevalier?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
I think statistically, by the way, his distribution in Ligue 1 was
as good.
Weaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weaker than Donnarumma.
Yeah. No. He didn't say he wanted a better goalkeeper. He said he wanted a different profile. That's what he's got.
It's where the metrics of that profile are hitting. We're not quite sure.
And then the whole goalkeeping situation around City this summer has been sort of fascinating. Not even touching Trafford, but Edison is of a mind that they were always after Donnarumma, and I would be inclined to agree. Like the idea that Donnarumma. They got 3 days before the end of the transfer window and went, oh my God, Donnarumma's available, let's go and get him. But like, it's just complete nonsense.
Unlikely, isn't it, at best?
So Edison thought that they wanted to sort of move him on and actually wasn't as inclined to move on as he had been in previous seasons himself. But then, obviously, Edison doesn't leave unless Donnarumma's come in and Donnarumma doesn't come unless Edison's going. So it's like a
massive standoff was happening.
Yeah, a little bit. So it's just, and that obviously took quite a long time to resolve itself. And then James Trafford is stuck in the middle. But I mean, like, just going back to the set pieces, I think Arsenal had 11 corners at the weekend and he come for about 8 or 9. Big punch, didn't try and catch any of them. It's just like, I know what I'm good at, bang, have that. And it's, you know, just going back to what I was saying about the derby earlier, about the Mbeumo save. Again, it's difficult with revisionism and things like that, but did he concede one, maybe two, with someone who's not 6'6" that comes and you know, Arsenal are so good at set pieces that
and he came they could have got
overwhelmed completely. I mean, how many times have we seen attackers basically stand on Edison's toes from a corner and really unsettle what City are doing? But they can't. Well, they can, but it's a much, much more difficult thing to do with Donnarumma.
Yeah. I also, sorry to be a, I'm a sicko for this new rule about the goalkeepers in 8 seconds. And I think that's a big thing as well for the reason why Donnarumma was punching it, because if you catch the ball, you're giving away another corner unless you can get rid of it in 8 seconds. Or if you punch it, you've got a chance of winning the second ball and you can keep it and build up from there. So there's a lot of...
I don't understand that.
Oh, so because if you come and catch the ball, Arsenal in previous years would have dropped off because you'd realistically in your 6 seconds you'd actually get 25, 30 seconds or so. But now you've got 8 seconds, and the referee will punish it.
No,
so instead Arsenal push up and stay pressed high.
No, you're not. He's not taking a catch from a corner, and the ref's doing this.
No.
The one listener that I've got my hand in the air doing the clock that they're supposed to be doing, which no one seems to do.
What I'm saying with this is that I think over the next few seasons you'll see goalkeepers punch a lot more than they catch.
Because well, you're part of the union, so
yeah. My membership says I have to say that anyway. So yeah. There we are.
That's interesting. I've not thought of that at all.
Yeah, I think it's changing the game, and we don't really realise how it's going to do it just yet. I think it's be fascinating.
So what you're saying is that Donnarumma, within 2 weeks of being in English football, is altering how goalkeepers play.
I mean
he's changing English football.
He is
much like his predecessor.
He's at the right club to do it, because it's Guardiola, Edison, they've all done it. This is a paid promotion for NordVPN. A bit later on in this week's show, we'll be previewing the trip to Monaco and City's first Champions League away game of the season. If you're heading out there, or if you're heading abroad at any point during the season, then keep yourself protected and help to support the podcast as well with a subscription to NordVPN. A VPN allows you to switch your virtual location, so it means that if you're hanging around the airport or the hotel before or after City's game in Monaco, then you can switch it on and make sure that you're not missing out on any of your subscriptions from home, because you can watch TV shows or films that aren't available in your region. Make sure that those subscriptions are not going to waste. You can also be sure that any connection to public Wi-Fi is safe, so you don't have to worry about your private data being hacked. And Nord's Threat Protection Pro means you're also safe from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Whenever I've been away from home, I've used NordVPN to keep myself safe, and I've also used it when recording the podcast while out and about as well, using Wi-Fi in hotels, cafes, and even, on one occasion, a motorway service station. Now, I use it on Mac and iPhone, but you can also use it on Android, Windows, Linux, and even your Android TV. I connect in one click by opening up the app and choosing one of more than 8,000 servers across 127 countries. But if you want peace of mind, you can turn on auto connect for the VPN to be active whenever you're online. One NordVPN subscription can also be used across 10 devices as well. To get the best discounts on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bluemoon. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee as well. Head over to nordvpn.com/bluemoon to get it, and we've also put the link in this week's episode description.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's talk about the intangibles then as well, because a lot's been made of Guardiola's approach to the game with Arsenal on Sunday. But every time he's been asked about it, he's ended up dropping hints about something else instead. Let's take a look at something a bit more unquantifiable than the tactics. Ahead of the match with Arsenal last Sunday, it's fair to say confidence among fans wasn't too high. This was Higgy and Amos on last week's podcast.
Obviously, we're in a bit of a transition. Arsenal are kind of fine-tuning Arteta's kind of vision. I think for this team, the way it's starting to gel, I think Arsenal might be too big a test, because they're far more the finished article than we are.
What do I want to see from City? A performance that is markedly different than the one that we saw at the Emirates last season. You know, if it's a 2-1 defeat, but City have played well, I'd be happy. At the same time, if they absolutely fluke a 1-0, I'd be dancing from the ceiling.
But then Pep Guardiola surprised us all. He named an unchanged team, and after taking an early lead, City defended for their lives. But the boss admitted afterwards that he hated doing it that way.
I would prefer to play another way, but when we play sometimes it happens. You have to defend, honestly, it's because the opponent is better. And when you are today, you have to accept it, and you have to survive it that way. Today was a 3 days recovery. We could do that. And Erling and the other one didn't have the energy maybe to do the first step. We didn't support from behind. And the opening is good. I want to be close to the team like Napoli in some moments against United, 11 against 11. I'm not talking against 10 because it's easier than today. I want to be honest. I would like to say, it's a pity. It's always fair, right? So I think they had a lot of threats in the corners. We had the clear chances in the transition. But in general, who controlled the game was Arsenal, it was not us.
You can tell from that clip that Guardiola isn't going to go full Mourinho anytime soon. It seems that Sunday was a means to an end, and the tactics were secondary to something else.
I want the ball away now. I want to be close Raya, not close Gigi. But I said the same time. The opening is do good things, you have to accept it, and from that we will improve. And improve for that happened with Well, I said many times at the press conference about the body languages and how we celebrate, how we are communicated, how you make an effort for the other one. And we lost it a lot last season. And I said, this season, I don't give a about the results. I want to see the spirit back in the training sessions and enjoy and, you know, and after the tactics. We lost it last season and you have to recover. And this week we recover.
Now, one little part of that answer jumped out. Have a listen to this bit again.
This season, I don't give a about the results. I want to see the spirit back.
Clearly, something was lost last season behind the scenes. Remember when Bernardo Silva hinted at a divided dressing room when he said this after the FA Cup final defeat to Crystal Palace?
In the bad moments, you learn new things. You learn who you can go to war with, first of all. Because it's in the bad moments that you see who the real ones are.
Several months on, and it's clear City are doing a lot of work to improve things off the pitch. There was all of the team bonding at the Club World Cup, including a day spent relaxing on the beach. On last week's show, Amos mentioned a trend he'd spotted after the wins over United and Napoli.
You saw at the end the impromptu lap of honour, which might not have been as impromptu as we thought at the time, because they also did it against Napoli on Thursday. But the smiles on the face, I think City could not afford to have not won that game.
And on a recent Let Me Talk podcast, The Athletic's Sam Lee explained what happened in a similar vein at Arsenal.
I don't notice these things. But my mate I was with before and after the derby last week, he was like, did you notice afterwards? He goes, Pep did a lap of honour with the players after the derby. He goes, he's never done that. I was like, yeah, they always go out. And he's like, no, not around the pitch. And I'm like, right, okay. And then my mate Mike, who was in the way in today, said, I don't know if you saw this on TV. And I was thinking this is going to be the Simon Bukowski thing that we saw afterwards, which he said was like 3 minutes after the game of like applause and like Haaland getting into the fans and giving his shirt and stuff. But my mate said before the game, they did a huddle and fan interaction in the corner. And he said they'd never done that before. And it's like something's building. Maybe that stuff doesn't count for much unless on the pitch matches it, unless there's the buy-in. But there's the buy-in. That's there.
If the tactics on Sunday were a complete change from what the players were used to, you certainly can't argue with their commitment to the cause. Guardiola said as much after the derby while giving an answer about Gianluigi Donnarumma's save from Brian and Mbeumo.
I like the save, and after the reaction from Josko, from Ruben, from Rodri going there, and you know, every player want to be loved. All of us, we want to be loved. And when a team share the good emotions together in the good moments and bad moments, that start to be a good team. And that is what they have to create. Create that everybody is allowed to do bad actions. His mates will be there supporting, and the good ones be grateful for the good action they have done. And when this happened, it's the only step I knew. As a tactics camp, later.
And all of that led to the performance at the Emirates. Ahead of Wednesday's game with Huddersfield, when he was asked about the tactics again, Guardiola once more started talking about the vibes at the club.
We recovered many, many things. The last season we miss it. Only say that's one thing since I started my managerial career for my team, the second team Barcelona, until now, is give everything to the pitch. And last season we didn't do it in some moments of the season. And this season, especially since I would say USA, but especially from United, since United we start to recover many things that define our teams for many, many years. And when that's happened, I would say I don't care. It's not the the right word, but I could not care less the fact that we can do better. Yeah, we'll do it. We could do a few things, merit decisions. Yeah, we'll do it. And we have to play a little bit more with the ball. Yes, we will do it. But first come the spirit that we have shown this week.
Given the points gap to Liverpool and that City are still looking for consistency in their performances and their results this season, there's possibly a lot more work to be done before a title challenge is on the cards. But there should be no doubt after this week that both Guardiola and all of the players have the stomach for the fight ahead. The good vibes appear to be back.
I'm Carlo Nash, you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Jack, you've been in press conferences with him a lot this week. He keeps talking about team spirit, vibes, everything else that kind of comes with it. He went unchanged for Napoli and then for Arsenal for what he said was consistency. But good vibes comes into it as well, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's one of the main things that there was the issue last year was they weren't sort of, I don't know, they weren't fighting for each other as much. And it is an intangible and it is an easy thing to say, particularly in hindsight. But I think quite a few of us at the time were saying, like, this doesn't feel right. Like, I think even though America ended up being a little bit of a disaster in the summer, I think they'd laid quite a lot of groundwork for better vibes there, because there was a lot of, a major tournament. You got loads of time between the games. You can do all sorts of stuff, sort of team bonding wise.
Go to the beach, have a kick around, that sort of
thing. Yeah. So I think that was good for them, even though the end result wasn't. And obviously that's sort of taken a kick in with the Spurs and the Brighton results. And I mean, look, Brighton. Pep looked lost to me at Brighton. He looked like he'd run out of ideas. Yeah, I'm staggered that they've managed to have the week that they've had actually after Brighton, but clearly after that result, certain players have stepped up and the management have stepped up and they've reacted in a way that they wouldn't have reacted last year.
Yeah, and James, you see it a lot that like over this week alone, they did a lap of honour after the game against United. They did a lap of honour after the game against Napoli. Sam Lee in that feature there was talking about how one of his mates in the away end at Arsenal had told him that they'd come and done a huddle in front of the away fans before the game. They spent ages on the pitch after the game. Haaland was chucking his shirt in, all that sort of stuff. Even Bernardo Silva kicking Gabriel in the way that he did. That kind of builds into it as well. I can't really explain why, but like it feels like they're really trying. At Huddersfield, they spent minutes and minutes and minutes after the game in front of the away fans again. They're really working hard at this, aren't they?
So I think, like, number one, I don't agree with huddles. Prior to or after the game, I'm not having a huddle. However, do you know what? Right, I think they sort of like points perhaps just come to me, but they probably sensed that. The City fans were maybe a little bit confused, I think, at the approach to perhaps the last 18 months. Sort of key points being persisting with the same players in system last season because it was full of players that Guardiola felt like were robotically programmed to do what he needed to do. Regardless of whether or not it worked. Into January, I think a lot of people were disillusioned with the fact that... So we signed... I'm going to call him Victor Rice. I'm not calling him Victor Heiss. So Victor Rice, Kuzanov, Marmoush, and Nico Gonzalez. All three, really, apart from Marmoush, disappeared. And I think there was some frustration in the fact that perhaps Kuzanov wasn't playing more, and it was felt a little bit like, what's Nico Gonzalez? What's his role in the team? Particularly then when you come to sort of the next element of it, which is when we're out in the States and Tijani Reinders comes in, and then you look a little bit more is there any strategy behind what they're throwing money at here? I think everyone was really disappointed at how that tournament panned out. So I think that going into this season, myself as a fan, and I think perhaps as a wider fan base, everyone didn't know really what to expect. And perhaps that Guardiola and the team are hoping to reconnect with the fans who may be disillusioned from those prior points mentioned. So that's one point. Number two is, obviously, this group's quite young, and in recent sort of like seasons, haven't really won much. And I think it's the winning that bonds the team and the players with each other and then to the fans. So he's looking for micro opportunities to do it, isn't he? So like a derby win, he's making the most of it, which I'm sure everybody will lap up and be happy with. And that's not a lap of honour pun, although it can be taken such. I think that, like, you know, building the momentum and picking the same team, City fans are like that. City fans kind of want to see a little bit more of that, I think, from Guardiola rather than the roulette of not knowing what to expect. I think creating a safe environment where our expectation as fans and Guardiola's expectation of a similar selected 11 can only, like, create a good bond with everybody. And I think like we're strongest when we've got momentum behind us. So the way the fixtures have stacked up, sort of like post Spurs and Brighton, you couldn't really have asked for it to go better. Getting a man sent off against Napoli getting a man sent off against us helps, but we're chipping away at that momentum to the point where I don't think we play Liverpool till what, November? We've got you look at the fixtures, we could, if he keeps uses a core nucleus of players and we keep winning, the fans are going to be buzzing. We're going to feel like we've got a good expectation of what he's doing with the team, because, you know, we didn't have that expectation. He knew what he was doing last season, certainly. That's only going to create a more of this sort of like good vibes mentality, and you turn the club into a freight train then, and that's when we're most dangerous.
You'd look at the week as well, Jack. He said in that feature there a couple of times, tactics come second to good feeling and kind of team spirit and that sort of stuff. Like he made a big thing of like after that Donnarumma save, I think it was Diaz and Haaland and Rodri all went to him and give him a bear hug and a fist bump and all that sort of stuff. It just strikes me how much of a contrast that is to last season.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I would take what he says about the tactics with a large pinch of salt. They've won a few of the titles because of the way they've played. I know that sort of. I always say that his genius of man managing players is sort of overlooked because his tactics are so amazing. Like, he is a really good man manager. Whether you agree with his methods of ignoring people and then being all over them and stuff like that, whether you agree with that or not, clearly he does get the best out of the vast majority of players that he coaches. But
Zlatan Ibrahimovic once said he didn't, so, you know.
Yeah.
That's a man whose opinion is very important, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's certainly more important than mine, but there we go.
I wouldn't put it that way.
Yeah. But I think I agree with this sort of spirit and the vibes and all that sort of stuff, and I've written about it, and it is very important. But I think it's become more important while they're trying to figure out what they're doing tactically. Yeah. Once they figure out what they're doing tactically properly, and once Pep Linders gets stuck into it properly, then the spirit takes a little bit of a back seat, because it's become that's the foundation of what they're doing. But actually, the most important thing is, like, this is how we're going to beat the best teams.
Yeah, and now they can actually keep the ball. So just keep the ball instead of having to need the ball, team spirit.
They don't want the ball. I mean, it's going to be fascinating on Saturday against Burnley when actually they're playing against a team who want them to have the ball. How are they going to react?
Jack, I want to touch on, James mentioned him there, but the fullbacks, because Nico O'Reilly had a pretty good game against Arsenal. He did well against Madueke and Saka. Matías Núñez is a man who has struggled and has had problems. He came in and was great. Meanwhile, Kusunov has had an absolute great time at fullback, and it's now a real shame that he's injured.
Yeah, I think Kusunov is the is the medium term solution at right back. Gives them defensive solidity that Nunes and Lewis don't. Obviously doesn't have the tactical and positional nous of Rico Lewis, but can fly forward. And saw it against United, where he was like prime Kyle Walker, didn't he? He's like bombing up and down and then hitting the first man with crosses. So it was like pure Walker, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Arsenal fans jeering when Leandro Trossard took it past him on the halfway line, and Kucinov just went, "No, all right, then I'll catch you before you get to the box and take it off you. All right, yeah. Fine."
He's absolutely mega, isn't he? Like, yeah. He's complete, that proper superstar. And the sort of, I mean, you could tell within the first, even before he kicked a ball, that were the YouTube clips of him just nailing people and bowling around, two-footing everyone, that he was going to be a fan favourite and a cult hero. So, I mean, he's going to go that way. And then, like, Nico O'Reilly is one of those, he's helped physically because of his size.
Mm.
But he is one of those players that's come through the academy that can play in eight different positions because of the way they're coached and the way the academy works and things like that, which is a massive feather in their cap that they could just fit O'Reilly in wherever. And he looks at home, defensively brilliant. I thought Madueke was probably Arsenal's most dangerous player in the first half, but O'Reilly came out on top, which just goes to show how good he was. And then someone was saying to me earlier in the week when we were talking about some of the younger players, he went, "O'Reilly, yeah, he's really, really good at left back, like, can really make it his own. But he'll do something every game where you go, ah, yeah, you are like a number 10. Like, he'll nutmeg someone on the touchline.
I took he'll do something as make a mistake, but it's not necessarily make a mistake. No.
I think he recovers quite well, doesn't he? I think if he does miss the ball or the man goes past him, that he's got the physicality and pace to like win it back. And I think my hot take of the moment is that he's a better left back than Aitnori.
I think defensively, yeah. I mean, Aitnori, we saw it in America. I think it was the Al-Ain game in Atlanta, where he was unbelievable. Like, he's just like bombing forward, like going. Pretty good final ball as well. But Al-Ain are like playing, I don't know, I don't want to say Stockport because I think that's derogatory to Stockport, genuinely, right? So you sort of, in games like that, you kind of get fooled and get tricked a little bit.
I think if you'd have asked anybody of the signings who they were most excited about and who most would slot into our system, they'd have said Ryan Aitnori. And I think that, like, perhaps I built up in me and I've been sort of studying him from what I've been able to. Obviously, I think he has missed a couple of games now with injury, but I just like what O'Reilly gives us. I think perhaps I've got it wrong, Aitnori seems to really narrow the flank and O'Reilly seems to broaden the flank somewhat. And he seems to get involved in areas, particularly going forward, that I've not seen Aitnori do in the Premier League for City so far. I mean, he's a specialist in that position and O'Reilly is we're looking at him and we're thinking he can do a job there. So there's a difference in the talent, obviously, but I'd be playing O'Reilly even when Aitnori's fit, personally.
Oh, right. I mean, O'Reilly takes up in the final third or when they're sort of progressing over halfway, O'Reilly sort of takes up those half spaces in a way that you would as a number 8 or a number 10, which actually opens up the either overloads the midfield or opens up the wide areas, which helps sort of a Doku or a Marmoush. Whereas with Aitnori, I agree with you that he does narrow the pitch, but when he's playing well, he does sort of hug the touchline a little bit. But I don't know whether he's been asked to sort of come inside.
It could be that, yeah.
Seems a strange thing though, because it you would want his qualities. You would want him hitting the byline, and
that's what I thought he was here to do.
Yeah. But you're right. He's not really. He hasn't really done it yet, has he?
No, not at all. He don't look super comfortable. And I just think O'Reilly, I think that part of it, I mean, this shouldn't be the baseline for choosing someone, but I kind of think he deserves it a bit more as well at the moment. I think that the performances he put in last season and how comfortable he looked against Arsenal, why shouldn't, you know, I mean, I'm always going to be biased. I think he's local, isn't he? I think he might be from Colliers. I'm always going to be biased when a local lad can get in the team, but his justification is in his performances.
I don't think he's had a bad game yet.
No, not at all.
I don't think there's a game where you've gone, that was a bit much for him.
No, I mean, did he change the cup tie against Bournemouth, was it, last season?
That was the key. Well, that was the moment it changed for him.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
There's another player that's obviously a local lad that I think we need to talk about from this week as well, in Phil Foden. James, it feels like he's now playing at the moment with the weight of the world lifted from his shoulders in a way that he hasn't done for some time.
So he's, I think that we were always looking to Phil Foden to fill a role in the Manchester City team that was as big as, perhaps looking back in terms of midfielders, Yaya Toure, David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne. And obviously, with the awards that he won the season before last, he started to hit those heights. However, you know, you can have one bad season and to come back and hit the ground running as he has done, plus get a sensible haircut, I think is extremely refreshing to see. He's as good ability-wise as any other player in that position in the world. And I think that because he's come through our academy and plays for City and hasn't had a journey, I think that he doesn't get the recognition that he perhaps deserves, but he's on fire and he looks healthy, he looks happy. It's great to see. And he's going to be that main man, that linchpin, connecting sort of the attack to the defence to the attacking midfield and sort of getting on the end of the move. That's where he needs to be. That's we want him through the middle. We want him making decisive contributions in the final third. And that's what he's been doing. I kind of think that when you see Foden squeezed out onto one of the flanks, that it mitigates a lot of what he's good at. I mean, the fact that he can play on the right or left wing, a club that's won lots of titles in the past 10 years, shows what his ability, you know, how good his ability is. But I want to see him in that middle of the pitch. And I mean, even that header that he scored, beautiful cushioned header. I'm thrilled to sort of see him back to his best.
It's the little things, isn't it, Jack? The things that I've noticed recently is
I think we're
going to
say
touches.
The same thing. Hang on. Go on.
I was going to say the little touches in the pockets and the way he just kind of gets on the ball, one lays it off, one touch, quick pass, and the way he's kind of gliding around the final third, it just kind of feels like he's a lot freer and a lot looser.
No, we're not going to say the same thing. It's a bit of a shame. I thought we were. I sort of noticed in the last couple of weeks he's getting like really, really annoyed or pissed off when players aren't playing potentially dangerous balls to him in tight spaces.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen that as well, actually.
He's getting like really like...
I could have said that, but I didn't.
Yeah, you could have done. Yeah. Do you want to roll it back? We can.
No, it's fine. I'll let you have it.
Complete each other's sentences if you want. I'm just getting like, give me the ball sort of thing. Whereas I think last year it would have been like annoyed, but not so visibly. Which maybe it's a stupid thing to pick up on, but it seems like it's quite pronounced.
That's good.
And the way he's getting around other players as well, like congratulating Mikasa for the 1-2 at Huddersfield when they were celebrating, and getting around people and like talking to them, and it's really good to see that, you know, he's 25, he's played 300 odd games already, he's obviously going to surpass Alan Oakes. You know, he's going to be the most decorated footballer that Man City have ever had and probably ever will have. And it's great that he's like sort of taking that, or has been taking that in the last few weeks, that sort of leadership on his shoulders, and is looking like he's enjoying himself again. Like I've had my editors on my case since the United game going, I think we need to do something about how he's reborn and things like that. It's like, well, he's got a, It's only one game, or it's only two games.
It's been a week.
The signs are really good, and like it's pleasing.
Yeah,
because I remember him like when he was an 18-year-old playing for England's under-21s, and like we discussed this before on this podcast, David. So like the players in that environment are like far better with the press than they are when they're with the clubs. So like Foden would. He'd have a good game and he'd come up and go, oh, what do you think? Like, or like give you a handshake or whatever. And you go, like, he's actually like, he's loving it. Like he just wants to play. And that
have you
was,
noticed
that
recently as well, this week, that, like this season so far, he's saying more when he's speaking. The content of what he's saying is a lot more, like there's a lot more to it than in previous years. Like you'd be full of kind of media trained cliches. Whereas, now he's kind of like he's talking about the team and like the role that he's playing and all that sort of stuff as well.
I think there was an answer about Guardiola on, I think it might maybe the Arsenal game or maybe it was United. I can't remember. But it was really, really in depth and in a way that you would go, Phil Foden's never talked like that before. Like something's obviously changed with him. Maybe it was he's been quite open about his mental health last year. Maybe there's a bit of weight has been lifted in that respect as well. Or maybe someone's got around him and gone, come on, like, De Bruyne has gone. You're the main man in this midfield. This is your midfield.
There's a vacuum that's opened up, and perhaps as he's matured on a personal level, and that professional vacuum's opened up for him, he's clearly standing up to it, isn't he? And that's good. That's what you want.
Yeah.
But it is three games, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the sort of you don't want to like.
I'm hamstrung by the fact I want it for him so much.
Yeah. I think everyone's the same. I think the press are the same. I think we all want him to do like really well for very similar reasons to you guys. I think.
Yeah. James, just quickly, Jack mentioned Mikasa there as well. He started the game at Huddersfield. A pair of Heskies came off the bench. It's an interesting time to see these young players come in and get involved.
So I looked at the bench and like I'm normally pretty good, and I was like, didn't really know half the players on the bench, but it's good because like listen, like you know, no disrespect to Huddersfield, but a great team to play in that moment because. It kind of was watching like City train, wasn't it? I mean, that is disrespectful to Huddersfield, so sorry about that. But we didn't really get sort of like past second, third gear, and to be able to then integrate some young players into debuts and to have Nico Gonzalez have a half decent performance and look pretty comfortable in the midfield, that's really positive. The only person I'm not willing to give any sort of credit to is Savinho, aka Mini Judas. So Mini Judas has got a little bit of work to do to get back in my affections after his flirtation with Tottenham. But you know, everybody else, great as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. That aside, Jack, I just want to ask you quickly about Nico Gonzalez, because he seemed to get quite a lot of coaching from Guardiola afterwards. What did you make of
it? I mean, it was so long, the video that I took, I didn't think it was going to ever post. I didn't think it was ever going to, like, I was like looking at it going, oh my God, like, it's going to be midnight by the time this goes up. but boy, was it worth it. Wow. To see a video of two grown men talking to each other on some grass, one of them pointed quite a lot, the other one looked quite sheepish. It was
it still wasn't as bad as, was it Nathan Redmond? And he didn't even play for us. Listen, Pep, nice one and all that, but can you get out of my face?
we've just lost in the last minute. Can you sod off? Yeah.
I thought the Gonzalez one was a bit of one in the eye for people who say that Pep only does it when the cameras are on. There was no cameras about, apart from...
There was a camera on him. You filmed it.
Yeah, but it wasn't a... There wasn't a man trailing him on the pitch, clearly there are things that Gonzalez does that he wants to improve, but clearly he feels like there's a player in there because he's so desperate to improve him. So I thought it was all right. Like, difficult to make too many judgments on the more established players on a game like that. But like, you look at, I thought Mikasa was great. Like, really, like, people around the club saying, oh, he's looked like a first team player for the first few weeks of the season, that he's been training with them every day and things like that. And Pep's been trying him as a number nine in training, and which is a position he's never played before. We spoke to him after quite briefly. Seems like a nice guy. Foden came up after to sort of bash him on the head as he was talking to us, which sort of is another indicator of
good
how
vibes.
Sort of
good
Foden
vibes
is,
yeah,
how he's reacting with other people. Mikasa sort of loosely offered to play a round of golf for me, which will never happen. it was an interesting night.
Burnley and Monaco to come now. Let's start by getting a view from Turf Moor. I've been speaking to Joe from Turfcast, starting with a look at being one of the promoted sides after back-to-back seasons of all three of them going straight back down.
I was one of these people with all the noise. I'm like, all three will go back down. I've said it before and I'll say it again. We were that awful the last time we were in the Premier League that I do have a bit of PTSD surrounding being in the Premier League, because last time under Vincent Kompany, we were god-awful. Obviously, the time before that, we weren't great, hence why we got relegated. But I feel like Burnley have started well and shown that they're not going to be bully boys, they're not just going to be a pushover. That label's hopefully going to stay with Wolves. Leeds have come up, and even though I do think they'll get relegated, I feel like they've made some okay signings. They've got 7 points. All right, they've beaten Everton and Wolves and drawn with somebody else, but they're still beating the teams that they should, well, not should be beating, but that they need to be beating to be able to get the points and stay up. And Sunderland, I think, are on even more points than that. Sunderland have had a very, very easy start, I'll admit that, looking at the fixtures. But I think all three promoted clubs have now, I think it was more points at this stage of the season after, what is it, four games, than what all three promoted clubs had after, I think it was something like 23 games last season. So the promoted clubs have obviously started a lot better. And they've obviously signed quite well as well, especially Burnley and Sunderland. I think that's what lets Leeds down a little bit. They did bring a striker in, but they scored 3 against Wolves, so maybe they don't need one. But yeah, I think all three promoted clubs are going to do better than what they did last season and the season before, when obviously we were one of them. So we're guilty of this as well. So all this talk about it is partly because of us. But I think the promoted clubs do better this year, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say you got a win on the board early on as well, and it was against Sunderland, another promoted side. But I guess it's important to get that win early on to not have the kind of negativity kind of continuing all the way through the season, I guess.
100%. And I think, I can't remember when our first win came last time when we were in the Premier League. If I remember rightly, it was against Luton away. And that was, I think, I can't remember exactly when it was. But the last time in the Premier League before that, under Sean Dyche, the year we finally got relegated under him, even though obviously he was gone by the time we got relegated, I think it came mid-November. And obviously that's just too late and you're already playing catch-up. Like, look at Wolves now. What is it? 5 games, 5 defeats. They're now playing catch-up. It's going to be so difficult for them to stay up. you don't want to get into that position where you're playing catch up. And like I said, this was a problem the last time we got relegated, not under Company, the time before that, because it's mid-November, you're playing catch up, and then obviously there's more pressure on your games. So therefore, the players are more inclined to make mistakes, the manager's more inclined to make mistakes, the crowd are a lot more nervous, that then goes down onto the pitch. So it's good to get the win on board. Yes, it was against Sunderland, but again, these are the teams that you need to be beating. Hopefully we beat Sunderland. We've got Leeds soon coming up as well at home, so hopefully we win that one as well. It's a shame we didn't turn the decent chances against Forest into a win, but I'm sure they can say the same things there. But yeah, it's so important to get that win early on, because you need to keep ticking along. Once you start getting like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points behind, then it's good night, unfortunately.
Yeah. What have performances been like? Because I'm conscious that you've got, I know United aren't what they used to be, but you were a last minute penalty away from taking a point at Old Trafford. And I mean, Liverpool, reigning champions, currently 5 wins from 5. You're a last minute penalty away from taking a point against them. So how have performances been?
Yeah, good. Performances have been good. Even the Spurs game where we lost, what was it, 3-0? We played well in patches there. And that was the first game of the season. The worst performance of the season came last night against Cardiff, but that was 11 changes and we won't go into that. But yeah, performances have done well. And yeah, United aren't the team they used to be, but they're still difficult to break down and you know, get a win at Old Trafford for teams like Burnley. And obviously Liverpool, like you said, the reigning champions, both of them needed a last-minute penalty, as you said. Both of them probably were penalties, and both of them are top six, big six penalties, if you will, which I'm sure we'll see something similar on Saturday, unfortunately. but 15, 20 years ago, they're both not penalties. So that's where the frustration comes from as a Burnley fan. But just a little bit of naivety, like them two performances, just pick on them two especially. Like, yeah, got ourselves in great positions, scored 2 goals at Old Trafford, 95th minute, you're thinking, hold on, we've got a big point here. Bit of naivety from Jadon Anthony, pulls the shirt. It's soft, but it's a penalty in the modern game. Ahmad's looking for it. He throws himself to the floor as soon as he gets into the box, but it is what it is. And same again with Liverpool. Hannibal turns his back on the ball, arms out as he's turning his back, hits his arm. Again, modern penalty, but it's hit it in from 3 yards away. 20 years ago, it's not a penalty, it's ball to hand, but that doesn't exist anymore, apparently. And again, it's just a bit of naivety. Stand your ground, put your hands behind your back. You know, just use your noggin a bit more. Like I said, a bit more naivety. So yeah, the performances have been good. Sunderland, we were the dominant side in the second half, played really, really well. Forest, again, I feel we're the better side for 70 minutes in that game. They started the better and they ended the better, but there was a big chunk in the middle where, in my opinion, we were the better side. So yeah, performances have been good. We're just lacking a little bit of cutting edge up front, if I'm honest with you. And there's a little bit of naivety creeping in these moments where we've had these penalties conceded against us. So the signs are good, but there's bits that we need to improve on.
Yeah, there's obviously one major common link at the moment in Kyle Walker. How's he been doing since he's arrived?
Really pleasantly surprised. I say pleasantly surprised. I knew he'd come in and do well. I know why we signed him. We signed him because he's got bags and bags of experience, like won multiple Premier Leagues, won the Champions League. He's coming in, he knows what he's doing. There was a moment actually against Forest on Saturday where one of their players went, I think the ball went out, or one of their players were receiving a bit of treatment, and he got up really quickly to try and take a quick free kick. But then Kyle Walker were bellowing at Dubravka, the goalkeeper, get down, pretend you're injured. And then as soon as he goes down, Kyle's like, hey, ref, you can't restart the game yet because he's injured. You know, just little things like that. And that's what we missed last time, because when Vincent Kompany came in, he signed a load of young, unknown, up-and-coming players from Europe. And we just didn't have that experienced professional to sort of like grab the situation by the ball sometimes and drag us through the games, whereas Kyle's come in and done that. And there's even been some not serious shouts, but some questions on social media and stuff like maybe he should be the captain, but obviously that would be very harsh on Josh Cullen. But yeah, he's come in, he's played really, really well. I remember when we did sign him, I'm in a WhatsApp group with a Leeds United fan and a Sheffield United fan, something that we did last season. And they were both instantly like, oh my God, that's an awful signing. You guys are definitely finishing bottom. He's well past it. Don't get me wrong, he's not as fast as he was in his heyday at Man City. But even if Kyle Walker is 75% of the pace that he had back then, he's still one of the fastest players on the pitch. And every Burnley fan has been very, very happy with Kyle Walker. He's been fantastic. And it's been great to see him in a Burnley shirt. Sometimes I still forget he plays, but he comes out and I'm like, oh yeah, Kyle Walker plays at Burnley now. and it's just one of them things that I remember when Ian Wright and Paul Gascoigne used to play for us back in the day. I'm going back a bit here. This is like the 90s, early 2000s. I'm like, oh God, yeah, we've signed Ian Wright. And that's the feeling I get with Kyle Walker as well.
Yeah, we had that with George Ware around about that time as well. It's just like one of those mad signings that you think, why is he here? How do you think Scott Parker will approach this on Saturday? Because I guess this won't be one of the games you're looking at as targeting to take points off for survival this season. But City, you know, have dropped points this season, so they're, if there's a game plan there's a potential there, isn't there?
Well, play on the front foot. We'll go at you. No, we won't. I don't know if you watched the Liverpool game where. I went on Twitter afterwards and I forgot how toxic some Premier League fans are, by the way. The majority of them live in Africa, Australia, America, you know what I mean? They don't go on the game, so their opinion shouldn't really bother me, but it does. And you go on Twitter and you're like, disgusting football. This is no interest in playing football whatsoever. It's just a low block, boring. What do you want us to do? Do you want us to open up against the Champions of England? Do you want us to open up and give Erling Haaland 30 yards of space behind him? Of course not. You're stupid if you think we're going to do that. So if you saw that game against Liverpool... That's what we'll do. Low block, a bank of five and a bank of four, and just try and stink the gaff out. That's what we'll do. It works sometimes, but for whatever reason, it's never worked for us at Man City. Like, there's a running joke amongst Burnley fans, and I say this every time I speak to a City fan, is playing City this week, aren't we? Yeah, 5-0. Yeah, fair enough. If we keep it down to four, we'll be happy with that. Like, the amount of times that we did the low block under Dyche at the Etihad, and then Mahrez would just ping it in the top corner from 30 yards. It's like, well, what can you do with that? Because you've got the quality to be able to do that. However, obviously this season, you're not as good as what you were in previous seasons, I think it's fair to say, so far. I'm hoping that you come out. I think you're the only serious contenders for Liverpool, if I'm being honest with you. So I'm hoping that you... I don't rate Arsenal still. I'm hoping that you come out and put a challenge together because I can't be bothered with them winning it again. but you haven't had a great start, let's be fair. The style of play seems to be a little bit different. More long balls, more aerial duels. And if you're going to do that against us, you might somewhat play into our hands if we're sitting back and you're pinging the long balls up to Haaland and stuff. Not that it's very, not that it's poor in the air, but you know, we've got Maxime Estève, who's quite good in the air, and Ekdal as well. So you might play into our hands a little bit. But yeah, in terms of style of play and Scott Parker approach, it's definitely going to be stink the gaff out and maybe try and nick one on the counter-attack, because we do have some pacey forwards, and that's what we did try to do against Liverpool. It's just we never really got hold of the ball. I think we had like 19% possession, so there's not much you can do with that. So in the very rare moments that we had the ball, we tried to hit them on the counter, and I'm sure we'll do the same with you on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, Joe, we've got the charity bet coming up. I like to give my prediction over to guests. So what are you having for this one? What's your scoreline for this?
5-0 Man City. No, I'm joking. honestly, every year I go to a lot of away games, and every year I go to City. Well, obviously when we play, and every year I'm sitting there at 3-0 down, 4-0 down, 5-0 down, or 6-0 that time in the FA Cup as well. That was my little boy's first ever away game, by the way. So thank you for that. And as I'm saying, I'm not coming here again. I'm like, I'm not coming here again. What's the point? I know it's only half an hour away, but I'm not coming here again. It's pointless. And then it rolls around. I'm like, yeah, go on, sorry. You never.
I was going to say, you're going on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm going. But I still expect us to get beat. I don't think it's going to be as comfortable as what it has been for you in previous seasons, just because we do seem a little bit more pragmatic, a little bit better, especially under the Vincent Kompany season. But it's still going to be a City win, isn't it? 2-0 Man City, I'll say. It's comfortable enough. You were 2-0 up with the 60th minute and then maybe just take your foot off the gas a little bit. Who knows? But yeah, 2-0 to Man City.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Joe from Turfcast. James, how much are you expecting a return to that unchanged 11 that Guardiola's been doing? Obviously, Kucinov can't play, he's injured, but that aside, could the other 10 be the ones that he names with, I don't know, Nunes or Stones or somebody coming in for Kucinov? Because all I'm thinking is, like, if he's been going for consistency before this game, it's kind of like back to the consistency thing for the Premier League, isn't it?
When you said Nunes, then I got quite a cold, threatening shiver down my spine. he'll tweak it. I think he'll tweak it because he'll look at Burnley as like, you're not going to disrespect them as such, but I don't think they've beaten us at home for about 70 years. So he'll probably look at that and think, right, I've got an opportunity here to fiddle with the starting 11 and perhaps bring some freshness into it. What I think, there's players that I don't think will be rotated out. I think Doku will be key at breaking their lower block. It'll be interesting to see if Haaland's fit, but if he is, it's going to be all about essentially working the ball around the box and creating an opportunity to stick it across the box with a bit of swaz for a tap-in for Haaland. I'd like to see maybe a little bit of change in midfield and sort of like maybe see Nico Gonzalez come in for a little bit longer. But then how do you sort of adjust the Rodri and Reinders partnership while you're trying to develop that? What I really, really would be loath to see would be would be James Trafford in net. Could you imagine?
It would be straight back to the Kevin Keegan era of not being able to decide whether Carlo Nash or Nicky Weaver was his number one.
Carlo Nash played for the Everton Masters at the arena recently, which I was a little bit disappointed in him for. but we did have David James in there. Anyway, we digress. Yeah, I'd like to see some tweaks, but not wholesale changes.
Yeah. Jack Doku, we didn't mention him in the first part of the show. He's had a brilliant week as well. He's going to be key, I guess, to kind of breaking Burnley down.
Yeah, he's had an amazing week, hasn't he? Just didn't see it coming.
No one did.
No, I mean, like, you're sort of loath to criticise Guardiola after Arsenal, but I mean, that. Do they keep the ball if Doku's on the pitch and don't get turned over and can, you know, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have taken him off personally. And he's become. Well, in the last week, he's become someone that you can rely on to go and carry the ball but also carry a threat.
And gets it in a way that just had what was needed against Arsenal. Yeah,
in a way that you just hadn't seen, and he was really threatening, but with an end product. So yeah, long may that continue. I mean, he was pretty buoyant after the United game. Said he was going. He got himself baptised that night. Obviously, his faith is very important to him. I didn't think he had the end product in him. I didn't think we were ever going to see it. So,
same.
Yeah, it's a big surprise.
Yeah. Is there a need to build on the momentum now as well, Jack? So, again, that unchanged 11 that he was going with after the results against United, Napoli, and the performance, less so the result, but kind of... And Guardiola said after Arsenal, you know, it's a pity that they equalised, but it is fair enough. And you kind of go, yeah, I get that. But, like, that equaliser isn't one that's going to knock the momentum that was built before it because of the overall performance. And like, if nothing else, that 11's versatile. It can play really well against Napoli. It can play really well against United and dominate the ball. And it can sit in deep when's needed. So, crack on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the consistency in selection has kind of been thrust upon him a little bit with the injuries.
Yeah.
So you know. If Cherki and Marmoush have been fit, then I think there's a bit of rotation between United and Napoli. But, you know, how many times, not necessarily with Guardiola, but how many times do you turn around to in a season and say, manager X has stumbled across his best 11 and he just should keep with it? I know I've said it a lot with Blackpool managers down the years. All of whom have stumbled, none of them have ever come up with best 11s of their own accord. And I don't know, I don't really know how much, how you could change it drastically. Maybe Savinho would come in. Gonzalez, as James said. Haaland. I mean, if Haaland's fit and he plays, because, I mean, who's going to play up there otherwise? Hmm. Do you play Bob? But then, did Bob do enough at Huddersfield?
No, absolutely not. He's had a couple of misfires, I'd say, Bob, recently. For somebody who I think is... He's like the number one player that I think the expectations on from fans to slip into the team after his injury and just do it. And it's been unusual to see him have a few off games, I would say. I wouldn't want to see him in that team. I think he's got to earn it a little bit more.
I think, I don't know this, but I just wonder whether he doesn't quite trust his body yet.
It's very possible. I mean,
a little bit.
I suppose you've got to be fair to him, haven't you? You know.
Yeah. Also, he's very young as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
He has given us the expectation that he can just come into the team and just do it. So then to see him not do it has been a little bit jarring.
Mm. Yeah. But I think it's more in those, if you were going to make changes, it would be more in those attacking areas, isn't it?
I agree, yeah. And I think as a thing to be fair to him, young players are by the nature a little bit more inconsistent and deserve time and a little bit, perhaps, you know, as I'm sort of saying it, I'm sort of thinking perhaps my expectations of him's too great there. I need to be a little bit more fair to him.
I also think the other thing is he became a world beater without touching a football, didn't he?
I don't think he started like 25 league games for us. Yeah,
absolutely not. No chance.
Yeah, it's quite low, isn't it? Yeah. Like, surprisingly so, considering his impact.
It's interesting the slack you're willing to cut him there, James, for being a young player, despite being older than Savinho.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I think the issues with Savinho have quite well covered. but if we do need to revisit it, you know, flirt with Levy at your peril, in my eyes, Savinho.
Yeah.
Levy and Lewis both going in the same week, by the way. Mm.
Could be a lot to do with it. Could be a lot to do with it, you know. Couldn't get that over the line, could they?
Let's take a look at Monaco as well. I've been speaking to Damien from the Monaco podcast Radio Diagonal.
Well, as you say, the leading League One is quite surprising for us because we didn't expect it that PSG, of course, is one of the best team in the world currently. And they lost against Marsiglia on the Monday night. And yes, it was quite a surprise. So in the end, we are quite happy because we are on top of the league. But I don't know if it's deserved because when we saw a performance of the team, it's not as high as we expected, as we want. We saw some troubles in the games. We are not dominant on the pitch. And something is quite... A little concern is that we are playing the second part of the table currently, and when we are playing teams strong as we are, we are not winning. We lost against Lille 1-0. We were quite it's a big loss against Club Brugge for the first game in the Champions League. So there's a lot of things to say and to correct to be better in the game. And so we are not quite to be honest, we are not very optimistic about the game against Manchester City.
Yeah, what's been happening with Monaco this season in terms of a style of play and how are you approaching games at the moment?
Well, Monaco has always the same identity from now several years. It's based on a big pressing. When you lose the ball, you want to take it back very quick, and we are a lot of disorganized now in this style of game because we don't keep the ball, we don't win the ball quick enough, and we also have some slow defenders. We have a team cut in two parts, you know. We have some lacks in the midfield. We also have a lot of injuries in the midfield, and so we are depending on that. And also, we have Monaco is as a high block team, but so when you have like 40, 50, maybe more meters between your defending line and between the goal, you need some speed if you have projection and counter attacks from the opposite team, and we don't have this, so this is a very big problem. And we saw that against Metz last game in League One, because they have good strikers, fast strikers, and they were able to counter the pressing, and then they can attack really fast, and we didn't have the speed in defense to take the ball.
I was going to say it was a big win against Metz, though, in the end. But you look at the times of those goals, 83, 86, 90. It was very kind of a last-minute job, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know whether the English word... in French, we have the expression, we say, une victoire en trompe-l'œil. That means that you won, but you didn't deserve to win, really. Because Metz scored the first goal. They had big chance 7 minutes later. And then we started to play a little bit better. We tried to dominate the game, and we scored one goal. But when we scored the second, thanks to Ansu Fati, who entered 30 seconds before at the halftime, they scored on the penalty. And so we were not dominant at all. The second half was a little bit better, but we are not in control of the ball. We had some difficulties against low block teams and teams who played in counter attacks. And Metz is exactly this kind of team. But then individual players make the difference. And because we have good quality in this player, instead of Metz, which is a team who played, they all lost in the league, and they didn't win a game this year again yet. So it's not a very it's not very reassuring.
Yeah, who is playing well for Monaco at the moment? If you are to get a result against City and a positive result, who will be the players that lead you to it?
Well, of course, we expect a lot from Magnus Akliouche, which is now into French international, but he did a very, very bad week last week against Bruges and Metz. We didn't saw him in the pitch. We need a good goalkeeper. For now, it's the second goalkeeper which is playing, but he did a great game against Bruges, even if he conceded 4 goals. But he did some big saves. So we need, I think, a big goalkeeper, a good goalkeeper against Manchester City. I think striking is okay. We have a good good strikers, even if they don't score a lot. But Mika Biret, which was one of the revelation last year when he arrived, scored his first goal of the season against Metz, and I think it could be, as you know, as Cristiano Ronaldo said, it's like ketchup, you know. Maybe when you score the one, all of them then come. I guess we can expect and hope that he will score more now, but I think it's for his mentally, for him, it will be a good thing because I don't think he doubted a lot, but I think it's always a big relief, you know. But the main problem will be on the midfield, of course, because we don't have Pogba. He's still in rehab now, and he's not expected until the mid-October. We don't have Zakaria, which is who is injured for 2 months. We don't have Golovin, also injured for 1 month. we had a young player from the academy, Aladji Bamba, which get injured against Metz. So he will miss 3 weeks at least. So we just have Camara, and maybe we will play with Jordan Deze, which is normally a right back, but he's doing great on the midfield. So, but I'm not sure against Manchester City midfield it will be fine. So I think the key point will be there.
Yeah, you mentioned playing in a high press. Do you think that might change for the visit of City? Do you think that Adi Hütte might decide to drop a little bit deeper, or is it something that he will stick to trying to do?
Yes, I mean, there are some reverse examples, you know, especially against Paris Saint-Germain, when sometimes when Paris was far away from us and very a level very high from us, he tried to not to. But this is really, really rare, because mainly against Paris, he wants to play like this and to go very high on the pitch to go on the pressing. So I don't know if Manchester City is, can manage easily to play against high pressing, but I'm sure he will want to do this, at least at the beginning to put some a little doubts on Manchester City heads, maybe to show them that we are here. But for sure we can't play like this for 90 minutes, so we will need to find something else when players will be a little bit tired of this, because this is quite exhausting.
Yeah. Well, Damien, you said you weren't feeling particularly confident. We have a charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show. I'm notoriously terrible at it, so I like to give my score prediction over to guests. So what would your score prediction be for 90 minutes in this game?
I would say like 3-1 for Manchester City.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Damien from Radio Diagonal. Jack, Monaco currently top of League One on goals scored, level on goal difference.
No. And points. Try that again, David.
Are they not? Have that changed again. Now?
No, you're not saying that. You're not getting away with League One.
Ligue 1.
Ligue 1.
That's what you want. Ligue 1.
Yeah. Okay. Ligue 1.
And you can keep that in.
Yeah, I am keeping that in, don't you worry. Don't know why I said that so threateningly. Level on goal difference and points with PSG. And my gut instinct there was that this is going to be tough. But then listening to Damien, he was like, I don't know why we're there. We don't deserve to be there. So I don't know what to make of this game anymore.
No, I was saying this to a few of the lads when the draw was made, that the draw that City have got is quite enticing, and they look like big ties, because they're sort of well-established names of European football that they're playing, but I think some of them aren't. Well, I don't know.
Monaco definitely fall into that category for me.
But they're like, yeah, an established name, but probably not much of a match for any Premier League side that would be in that competition, I would say. Like, you go Villarreal away, but no, I mean, they should hammer Villarreal away. They should beat Monaco comfortably, and the home games they should win easily as well. So I don't think there will be, unless there's some form of heads-off syndrome, I don't think there's going to be the same problems as there were last year.
Yeah, well, we're still before the point of the season where it fell apart last season. They had two wins and a draw from the first three in the Champions League last season, and then
thanks
it fell
that,
to
David.
Pieces. So, yeah. I think it was important context.
I think it was this week, 12 months ago, after they won in the last minute of Wolves, I turned around to Guardiola and said, "Oh, you must be pleased that you're winning games despite not playing that well." And like, I've never known him so angry at me. Oh, we were playing great. But I was like, I don't think you are. And then,
a few months later, a few months later, they were going into games, and I'm sure he was thinking, we're going to get beat today.
Yeah,
Jack. He seems quite a prickly character. like when you're chatting to him? Is he almost like, wait, is he expectant that he's going to face some form of criticism and like he sort of like sets himself up for that, like rather than people, you know, being nice, extra nice to him?
Yeah, his default setting is that people have got a list of sort of gotchas.
Right.
So that was his that was certainly his how he sort of approached his presser after the Arsenal.
So he's backs up like before he even sort of like yeah.
But I also think that sort of that helps him and that drives him, and he needs someone to rail against.
He's always got something to prove, hasn't he? Like yeah. I think that for a guy who's accomplished so much. I think.
Why is he still here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he still has things to prove.
But like the proving himself and using things as a motivation. Like, you know, he's told the players everyone thought we were boring. Like, no one wants you to win this league. And then in the Champions League, he was like, "Oh, the refs have given you shit decisions for years. No one wants you to win it." But and he uses this sort of stuff to wind people up, and it really helps him. And he does it with himself. So I wouldn't say he's not combative. I don't think. But he sometimes
he's a bit cynical, maybe.
Sometimes he sees things that perhaps aren't there. With questions. It's like what I was saying before about if he hears a buzzword or hears like a trigger word, it'll go off, and then like when he'd misunderstood what I'd asked on Sunday, I had to turn around. Like, really, you're not allowed more than two questions, but I was like, and that was my second, but I was like, well, I can't have him thinking that I've called him Mourinho, because I haven't. So I was like, oh, just to clarify, like, I actually meant this. And sometimes it's important to do that. But I think with the guys that have been doing him for 9.5 years,
there's a relationship.
He's all right with most of us, yeah.
Yeah. Just finally, James, on Monaco, they were battered by Club Bruges in the first game. So I'm wary of overestimating what they might do, given that. But like I say, City got 7 points in their first three games last season. So like, don't go into this thinking it's just going to be a nice, simple walkover.
Well, they are top of the league. I mean, I know it is League O, and not much.
League
should
One,
be...
mate. League One. League One.
Sorry, yeah. I know it is League Uno. But like, you know, you can't extrapolate a lot from a side being top. But they're above PSG. The squad is riddled with a few ex Premier League sort of stars. You've got Zakaria in there in midfield, Ansu Fati, who was the heir to Messi. Fortunately, there's no Falcao. Still got his lob seared into my brain. But listen, you know, you're going to come up against some outfits that have got a little bit less pedigree, and I am probably guilty. We had a conversation earlier. I'm probably a little bit guilty of maybe looking down my nose at Monaco. I think perhaps I perceive that as like, you know, Monaco's not a real place. It's just where people go and live on a yacht and gamble and what have you. And there can't be many people in Monaco to support the team, which I'm sure our guest Monaco speaker from Radio Diagonal, which sounds like a fantastic name for a band, would disagree. But we're gonna beat them.
Okay, well, let's get to the predictions then. In both of the games this week, we were one goal away from winning some money on the charity bet, but we didn't get anything right, so we've not won anything yet this season. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City fans' food bank support group. They'll be back outside the Etihad collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank on Saturday up to about 2:30, so please go and see them if you can. We heard from Joe that he's gone for a 2-0 City win in the Burnley game. That's 6-1 and £60 if he is right. Jack, what are you having?
I was just sort of thinking about Radio Diagonal, actually.
Good name for a band, that.
I swear they're playing Night and Day on Friday night.
Mate, it's a really good name, that. It reminded me of there's a decent band called Bar Italia, and it's in a similar vein to that. Like, I have got no musical expertise, but if I do, then I'm going to be beating you to Radio Diagonal, lads.
anyway, prediction, Jack.
Sorry, 4-0 against Burnley.
4-0 is 9-1 and £90.
Harland,
James,
to get all four.
You wanted, I think 4-0 was it you wanted, or was it 2-0 you wanted?
I'll raise you. I'm going to go 5-0.
5-0. It wasn't his first choice, ladies and gentlemen. 14-1, though, if he's right. £140. And that brings us on to Monaco. Damien went for a 3-1 City win, which is 10-1 and £100. Jack, what are you having?
2-1.
2-1 is 7-1 and £70. And once again, James, you sent me your predictions and then it got torpedoed by one of our guests. So what was your backup choice?
2-0. In and out, nice and clean.
In and out, nice and clean. 2-0, 8-1, £80 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. Now then, that is it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks also to my guests for this one. Jack Gorn.
Thank you very much, mate.
And James Faulkner.
Thank you very much, Jack and David. And thank you also, listener.
We've got a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show coming up. That was a return to City Heaven, City Hell, focusing on games with Wolves. If you'd like to listen, it's just £2 per month, and you can sign up by going to members.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week after the games with Burnley and Monaco. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can, and don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I knew City were in trouble in this game. Firstly, because we had you on the podcast the week before telling us just how bad Wolves had been at the start of that season. And mostly because Guardiola in his pre-match press conference had called Hwang the Korean guy.
Yeah. As that commentary happened there, that clicked in my head as well. It's funny because the week after, there's a guy, I don't know if he still wears it much, there's a guy that sits right in front of me at Molyneux, and he's got a Wolves shirt from that season. It just says the Korean guy on the back of it.
I remember Calvin Phillips gave an interview that said it's the biggest week of my City career, and he played against Newcastle in the League Cup and then didn't feature again. Matias Nunes, a player that Guardiola would later go on to say he doesn't fancy him in the centre and midfield.
In the ballad of the most important week of Calvin Phillips' City career is... Nunes gets the hook at half time for having an absolute torrid in centre midfield. He brings on Oscar Bob. Calvin, we could bring you on, or we could bring on a youth team winger. Like, what's he going to be? And he garbled some stuff about Bob in the small spaces and all that. He does bring Phillips on in the 65th minute, and Hwang scores
in the 66th.
Thanks for coming, Calv. My word.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.